sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Monday, June 23rd, 2014, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Award-winning filmmaker and documentarian PJ Raval is back with us again today to continue our discussion of his groundbreaking movie, Before You Know It. Like last week, he's here as part of the Sex Wisdom series because his film shines a spotlight on an often ignored segment of our youth-oriented culture, LGBT seniors and elders. And the result is nothing short of stunning. But wait, you didn't miss part one of our conversation, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you got to do is use the search function in the header, type in podcast number 420, and voila! But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search. PJ invites you to visit him on his movie site, beforeyouknowitfilm.com. And be sure to look for his films page on Facebook, and don't miss his movies Twitter feed, and you'll find all of these links in today's podcast posting. Today's show is once again brought to you by the granddaddies of male masturbation toys, the amazing Fleshlight and Fleshjack. For those of you who have never seen one of these brilliant devices, let me describe it to you. It looks like a huge flashlight, thus the very clever names, don't you know? Inside the durable plastic case, there is a soft, fleshy inside called Super Skin. And trust me, this stuff is aptly named because it is phenomenal. But that's just the beginning. What makes the Fleshlight and Fleshjack so freaking amazing is that you get to design and personalize just about every aspect of the unit you purchase. Now, what other toy company allows you to do that? And remember, if you make your purchase by clicking on the Fleshjack banner in the sidebar of drdicksexadvice.com, a portion of that sale will come back to us as support for these shows. Now, you can underwrite this important sex-positive effort and squeeze one out at the same time. What could be better than that? Okay, on with the show. PJ, welcome back to DrDickSexAdvice.com and the Sex Wisdom Show. I hope you had a good week. I'm delighted that you had more time to spend with us today, because last week we were just getting to know you and we hardly had any time to talk about your movie Before You Know It. So let's start there, if that's good for you.
Okay, great.
Good. So Before You Know It, as we have already discussed last week, is a film about three senior citizens. But as you write, the subjects of Before You Know It are no ordinary senior citizens. They are go-go booted bar hoppers, love-struck activists, troublemaking baton twirlers, late-night internet cruisers, seasoned renegades, and bold adventurers. They are also among the estimated 2.4 million lesbian, gay, and bisexual Americans over the age of 55 in the United States, many of whom face heightened levels of discrimination, neglect, and inclusion. So, as we already discussed, the fact that seniors and elders often have a hard time in our youth-oriented culture, and LGBT seniors and elders are particularly vulnerable. So let's talk about that. Had you any exposure to this population before you decided on it for the subject of your film?
Yeah, you know, part of the inspiration behind this film came about because, you know, I made a previous film called Trinidad, which is about a small town in Colorado called Trinidad, which is at some point was known as the sex change capital of the world.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, we could do a whole other episode.
Oh, I guess we could. Don't get me started.
But I was touring with that film, and I happened to be in upstate New York, where you know, the Woodstock Film Festival threw us a reception, mm-hmm. and at the reception, it was at the Kingston LGBT Community Center, and it happened to be attended by a large population of gay seniors. I mean, I would say about 85% of the room was 65 plus, and the host, Ron Neuswainer, he asked me to just kind of go around and, you know, thank some of the constituents. And I did, and they all had very interesting stories to share. And I think even just as a visual, being in a room and seeing a room full of, you know, LGBT seniors, that's what made me start thinking about it in terms of these people are part of my community.
Right.
How come I'm not hearing stories about them? And around the same time, I was also volunteering, teaching queer youth filmmaking. You know, there were kids in there that were like 14. And so in, you know, the same month to be in a room full of 74-year-olds and then all of a sudden be in a room full of like 14 to like 17-year-olds, you know, and it really made me think about, you know, are these 14 or 17-year-olds even aware of these 74-year-olds? Because I barely am,
right?
You know, and
that's
I'm somewhere in the middle. So that kind of was a huge inspiration behind it. But what I also quickly, you know, realized was I had no idea. You know, I'm not a senior. I don't know what the experience is. So part of the adventure, you know, of making this film, which is why I do like making nonfiction films for this reason also, is that it was exciting to me. I was like, well, you know, I'm just going to go out into the community and meet people. I'm going to just, you know, try to, you know, go around to different places and do some research on this and see who I find and who I meet and hear some stories. And maybe I can share some of those stories.
Outstanding. So all three of the men that you feature in your movie have compelling stories to tell. I was particularly struck by Dennis, whose alter ego is D.
Uh-huh.
What an amazing story he had to tell. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch?
Sure. So in the film, when we first meet Dennis, we meet him, you know, as I mentioned last week, in Niceville, Florida.
which isn't it at all.
Yes, which maybe the name of the town is questionable when you see the film. But so Dennis is living a closeted life, and we literally meet him in the closet.
True. Brilliant, by the way. Absolutely brilliant.
And, you know, and he shares with us that, you know, he was married for a number of years and then his wife passed away, no children, you know, was kind of quote unquote lost, in his own words. But at that same time, he started realizing that maybe he was wanting to explore his sexual identity.
Right.
So in the film, Dennis is very much a coming out story, but along with that is him discovering his fondness for cross-dressing.
Right.
You know, there's actually, it's unfortunate, but there's actually a line that used to be in the film that is no longer, where he says, "Sometimes I feel like a caterpillar turning into a butterfly."
Yes.
And I think that's how I would describe Dennis's storyline. Is, you know, he emerges as a butterfly.
It is so amazing. Absolutely so amazing transformation. How did you find him?
So you know, I found Dennis through Rainbow Vista, which is
right, the Portland place.
Yeah, which is a senior active living facility right outside of Portland. You know, I found them on the internet the same way that Dennis did. You know, I called them up and they invited me to come out. And I was there. I happened to be there at the same time that Dennis was there, and Dennis was visiting, just checking it out.
Uh huh.
So,
which we basically see in your movie.
Yeah.
That
so,
sort of thing.
Yeah. So essentially, you know, after speaking to him, and you know, fortunate enough, Dennis was actually the very first person I officially spoke to in
wow.
terms of, oh, can I just, you know, ask you a few questions, share a little bit about your experience. And so I was immediately fascinated by him. And a couple months later, I contacted him and said, I would love to come out to Florida and see what your life is like there. And that's where I started filming officially for the first time for the film.
No kidding. So it seems to me that for someone who is not, in quotes, out, even to his family, maybe even to himself, being one of the main subjects in a documentary film like yours must have been a really stretch for him.
Yeah, you know, I think for the audience, if any of them, you know, get a chance to see this film, or who have seen this film, I hope people would agree with me. Dennis is a very quiet and perhaps reserved person, but that doesn't mean he's not adventurous.
Yes.
And he's not brave. He is so adventurous and so brave.
I guess.
And I think that kind of falls into it, because I personally couldn't imagine being a subject of a documentary. I mean, it's a challenge, you know.
Because it is.
It is really.
And you don't really have any guarantee that the person who is doing the filming is going to be generous and kind to you, because, and the editing process, as we talked about last week, you can make him look like a buffoon or an asshole or anything, you know. So it's a gamble.
I mean, it really is a trust, you know. It's a real big trust situation. And so, and again, you know, we spoke previously about how long it took, and, you know, this film took overall 5 years, and I think that's so much about it is, you know, it's hard to go in and just, you know, within like a month try to like gain all this intimacy and trust, you know, from a couple interactions. Like, it really has to grow as a relationship too.
So when I first saw Ty, the second guy in your film, on screen, I said to myself, oh my God, I know this guy. Turned out, he wasn't the person I was thinking of, but my friend's story and Ty's story were remarkably alike, and they even look like brothers. That's what's so weird. So Ty is involved with SAGE, S-A-G-E, in Harlem. Could you tell our audience what SAGE is?
Sure. SAGE is, it started as a New York-based organization, and SAGE stands for Services and Advocacy for GLBT Elders. And they primarily are an organization that is about bringing awareness to and creating support systems for aging populations in the LGBT community. And they have a division in Harlem, because Harlem has its own unique set of challenges. You know, a lot of people of color, African American, Spanish speaking cultures, so Ty, who is the second subject in the film, when we meet him, he is the outreach manager for SAGE Harlem. And he's also a Harlem born and raised, Harlem native, if you will.
Yeah. So the interesting thing is that at the same time you're doing this documentary with Ty, the whole marriage equity, gay marriage thing is playing itself out in New York, and you're there to capture it, and it's stunning. I mean, it's a wonderful, you know, historical moment that you were there to capture.
Thanks. Yeah, and you know, that's what's so, for me, so fun about making nonfiction films is you really don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And that was something that happened. And it's really interesting, because as much as, you know, Ty in the, in the film, it's about him experiencing everything. In a lot of ways, for me, the film also becomes just kind of a document on my life for the last couple years. Because I was there for all of this, you know. And I never thought I would be, you know, in New York City when, you know, marriage equality passes there. And nor did I ever think I would march in, you know, the New York City Pride Parade, you know, the day after. So that was pretty, these are pretty exciting memories I'll have with me as well.
Right. So Ty is this absolutely remarkable man who is in love with love, and he's so charming. He said, by the end of the movie, I was saying to myself, sheesh, won't someone please marry this man already? Holy cow!
Yeah,
he desperately wanted to be married.
Ty is like, he is just so, like when I first saw and met Ty, I was like, Ty is just cool. He's just like a real cool guy, and he's such a romantic.
Yes.
And he's so sweet, and so charming, and so he definitely is in love with love, you know?
So the third man equally a character, if not more so than all the others, there is Robert the Mouth. And what a treasure he is. He owns and operates the oldest running gay bar in Texas, and it's a drag bar, no less. So one had to have some mighty big cojones to do what he did way back when he started to do it in fucking Texas, mind you. So how did you connect with Robert?
I know, Robert is so brave, right? So after I started filming Dennis and Ty both, I always knew that I wanted there to be a third storyline. And I also knew that I wanted it to be in that part of the country. You know, I live in Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm. Texas, I think, is a really interesting place to look at because it is one of the places that you do not think about at all when you think of gay culture.
But a microcosm, is it not? Yes.
So I thought it could be a really interesting place to look, and I wanted to show, obviously, that, this is a nationwide, issue. This is not just, on the coast.
Yes.
Or different parts, in specific parts of the country. I had heard a lot about Galveston, Texas. I had never been, but I had heard that it was largely a destination place for seniors who are retiring, and it's an island.
Yes.
So I also heard it was, pretty laid back, and that after a series of hurricanes and a lot of young people had moved out, so there was also just naturally a larger senior population. But the thing that hooked me was I heard that there was a lot of quote unquote vibrant gay bars.
a lovely euphemism, don't you know?
So I was like really curious, like, what could this town be all about? So I went down there completely on a hunch. And if anyone goes down to Galveston and asks about a gay bar or gay seniors, they're going to send you to this bar, Robert's Lafitte. As soon as I walked in, Robert was sitting on his stool that, in the film you'll see is kind of like his spot in the bar. And I met him right away. And within 24 hours, I started filming him. And, Robert to me is an example of someone who, out of the three subjects, he is the one that from very on was like, fuck you.
Like, it's true.
Yeah, he's very like, you cannot fuck with me because I know who I am. I'm not afraid who I am, and I'm not afraid to show it to you. And if that means you want to fight me, I'll fight you back. And he will say stuff. You do everything and anything you need to be yourself. He would tell me all these crazy stories, like if you're in drag and someone gives you shit, you give them shit right back, even with your heels on, things like that. And quite a character, again, like there's no way,
absolutely,
no way I could have even conceived of a character like Robert if I were to make this like, a fiction film. He's just such an amazing, complex and, completely interesting person.
Right. And the wonderful thing about your movie, and at least what I found so wonderful about it, is that you intertwine all these three stories. It's not, you're not telling just the one story at a time, and you're bouncing back and forth between all these people. And at first, it's a little like, whoa, where are we at now? Holy cow, we're not in Kansas anymore. It was so charming, very exciting to, because I wanted to know what happened to all these people, and one of course has to wait to the end of the movie to see the conclusion. So there you have it.
Yeah, I mean it was, and again it was interesting when I started making this film, I knew I wanted there to be three subjects, and so actually when Kyle Henry, the editor, and I were working on this film, we actually edited each storyline separately at first because we just wanted to, we wanted to make sure that each one
held together,
was really its own independent story, and then we intertwine them.
Oh, it was lovely. Honestly, it was it's really a rewarding experience. Absolutely interesting. And to see them, juxtaposed side by side, these very, 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 very different men, is a real treat, because it really does underscore, the diversity, even in this small community, comparatively speaking. Very cool.
Thank you.
So, speaking of your collaboration with Kyle, let's talk a little bit about making a movie. To make a work of art like Before, you have to collaborate with lots of other artistic people, right?
Correct.
So I suspect that this this ups the artistic ante considerably. All of these people must also have a vision of how the project should look and feel and sound and all that. Before the even the first scene is shot, how do you take control and become the man with the overall vision?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's my job as the director, is to have the overall vision. Exactly that, the overall vision. And the people that I'm bringing in to collaborate with, they're focusing on, on a specific aspect of that. So, for instance, my cinematographer, Mike Simpson, who did a fantastic job shooting this film, I brought him in. He and I have worked together a lot. He shoots a lot of my work. And I told him just basic ideas that I had. And I said, now it's also your turn to tell me the ideas that you have, and we'll pick and choose which are the best ones, and it's important for me that they understand what my vision is, so then that way all the comments that they have should hopefully be supporting my vision and making me, so maybe he can actually help me see it better than the way that I'm seeing it, knowing what my intention is.
But you do have to rely on this person, because you are not wielding the camera, as the director.
Yeah, and I think, again, we're talking about just like how the subjects need to trust me as a filmmaker. I also need to trust my crew, and they have to trust me. They have to trust me in the sense of that my vision works, or that my vision is, that they can understand it. And part of me, I think part of it also is because I also have worked in and still work as a cinematographer. I think that I understand the importance of, being a crew member. And so I really embrace having crew members because, they make me look good.
It's true. It really is. And the interesting thing is that, as you suggest, you couldn't do the movie without them. Where you have approached somebody and said, I'd really like to work on this film, and they said, get out of here, that's fucking cuckoo, I couldn't do that?
No, I mean, as I mentioned, I like to work with a lot of friends, so most of the people that I've been, working with
are as twisted as you, probably.
Yeah. As crazy as I am.
Oh. So the topic of sex and aging is a hot-button issue for most people. I know this firsthand because my book, The Amateur's Guide to Death and Dying, has a full chapter on sex and intimacy concerns for sick, elder, and dying people. And I just want to say, I was so pleased to have this opportunity to see your film and to talk to you. I mean, and I'm so glad that people much younger than I am are being conscious of stuff that I think is going to be helpful. I mean, somebody who watches your movie, I think it's going to stay with them regardless of their age, and maybe it will impact them, when they're older themselves, and have the courage that Robert or Ty or Dennis has exhibited in your film. So good for you.
Thank you.
Couple questions in the few moments that we have left. Who inspires you, and who are your sexual heroes, if you have any?
Wow, who inspires me? So I'm part of this... what immediately comes to mind is I'm part of this... organization in... very informal organization in Austin, Texas, called Queer Bomb. And that's, if anybody's interested, they can go to our website, which is queerbomb.org. And we basically put on an alternative, radical, pride, in a sense. Celebrate, our lineage linking back to Stonewall and that kind of unapologetic behavior. And that, we have a manifesto and everything. And those kinds of people those kinds of people inspire me. You know, the people who are not afraid to speak out. You know, the people who are not afraid to, you know, put on the glitter and walk down the street knowing they're going to get smokes. All those kinds of people inspire me because it makes me want to be, you know, equally as brave and equally as outspoken when I feel the need to be.
You are that indeed. What does the future hold for you and your work? Working on a new project?
Yeah, you know, I am. I mean, I'm going to be touring with this film for a while. You know, we're in the middle of our theatrical tour, and then we'll be doing broadcast and DVD and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I'm always working on new projects. I mean, I have another documentary that I'm trying to get off the ground, and I actually have a fiction film that a friend of mine has. And hopefully both of those projects you'll see in a bit. I also, you know, since, I mean, you might have an interest in this, I also collaborate pretty heavily with an artist named Christine, and that's C-H-R-I-S-T-E-E-N-E. It's a very not safe for work kind of work. So, too, but I make all these videos, you know, with this person, and, you know, if people are interested, they can go to our website, which is, which is christine.org. And that one's really funny. You do have to spell it correctly, because if you forget the E, it goes to Christ for, you know, Teams for Christ. A very safe for work.
Well, I'll be sure to have that link in today's podcast posting, which brings me to the end. We are finished, time-wise anyhow. I am so delighted to have had so much of you these last 2 weeks. It's a joy getting to know you. I'm so grateful that you're doing the work that you're doing. It is changing the world, and I'm pleased to know you. Before you go, would you give us your website address again, walk us around a bit, and tell us where the movie is going to be premiering soon?
Yeah, I mean, people can go to our website, which is beforeyouknowitfilm.com, and we have a list of screenings that are up for our theatrical tour. From June 6th to June 12th, we're in Seattle, but from June 13th to June 19th, we're in Los Angeles, in Portland, in Palm Springs. We open in Austin, Texas on June 20th, in Lake Worth, San Diego, all the way to Detroit, in June 27th. So people can see, and we're actually, you know, the city listings are growing. And if anyone sees this, if anyone wants to see the film but it's not listed in a theater, you can actually request a screening, which is really cool.
You can
request a screening, and we help set up an event, and if enough tickets are sold, then it becomes a screening.
So that's grand.
And then people can also be notified later for when it becomes out on, when the film comes out on DVD and is available for, you know, download and streaming and all that kind of stuff. So
So good luck on your tour. That must be grueling, you know, shaking hands and, you know, being nice to people for many hours at a time. I'd hate it. Okay, kiddo. Until we speak again, we will be visiting you in cyberspace. Thanks, BJ.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
What a delightful show. Huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week at this same time for a swell Q&A show and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is the fabulous Fleshlight and Fleshjack. You know, all you guys out there who keep complaining to me about your short fuse, well, here's a tip for you. Being a great lover, being able to control your orgasmic response and last for as long as you like takes practice. Sure, you can learn to last longer simply by using your hand, but now there's an even more effective way to train yourself for sexual stamina and endurance with a partner. Allow me to introduce you to the Endurance Jack. It's just one of the fine designs from Fleshlight. It comes with a stamina insert, which has extra large bumps and a tight canal. With just a little practice, this puppy will help you last longer, gain control over your ejaculatory response, and avoid untimely climax. Once you've accomplished this with the Endurance Jack, you'll have all the skills that you need to last and last with a partner. And remember, these fine products are made in the good old US of A. And if you make your purchase by clicking on the FleshJack banner in the sidebar of DrDicksSexAdvice.com, a portion of that sale would come back to us as support for these shows. Now you can underwrite this important sex-positive effort and jerk off at the same time. How fun is that? Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.